what I'm interested in is kind of how you identified that market. Whenever you said, your market wasn't buying at this price point, but they're buying at this price point. How were you able to determine what that market wanted after you first started?
Okay. Well, the market determines the price point. And so you have to figure out pretty early on what your demographic, who you're really marketing. Like what, when I first started, I tried to compete with the people that had taught me who were building bluegrass guitars. Mm-hmm. And there were people that didn't need to make money doing it. This was their like hobby. And I mean, it wasn't necessarily a hobby, but it was a side thing. And they got a kick out of building the guitars. And so they were selling them for, I think, like $1,500 or $2,500. And the guitars were worth thousands and thousands of dollars. But it didn't matter to them because they were trying to help players get. And so for me to compete with that was pretty much a non-thing, because I realized first off that I could only, once I figured out how many guitars I could build a year or in a given period, then I could do the math of, okay, well how much money do I need to survive to pay my bills? And just do the arithmetic and realize pretty soon that I had to make a certain amount per guitar in order to just break even. And that was not even without making a profit, but just break even and pay everything. And I'm at my age, which was at the time 55 or so, I needed to be sure that I could, I've still got to work towards retirement and stuff. So there's a lot of issues in play there. So early on, I tried to sell them cheap in order to get them into hands of people. And I was in on a trip with my wife, and we were looking to visit another builder. And when we looked on his website, we saw that he'd been building for 20-something years, and he was building custom acoustic guitars, and he was selling them for $1,500. And I had already done the math and knew that I couldn't even survive at $1,500 a guitar. I wasn't going to be able to do this for a living.
Yeah.
And I realized that $1,500 for a custom instrument, like an acoustic guitar, which takes a lot of time and effort, was pretty dang cheap. And therefore, I wasn't even interested in looking at a guitar that the person valued at $1,500. And I realized at that point, kind of when we were still talking demographics, and I told my wife, the demographic I'm trying to market to is myself. I'm a guy that buys custom instruments, and I'm frugal, so I don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on something, but I do recognize quality and the value of quality. And so I kind of said, here's what I would do. Here's what I would pay for a good guitar. And so we came home from that trip. We didn't even go visit the guy that we were talking about, because it was like, I wasn't even going to look at his guitars. And I thought, well, people are going to be thinking the same thing of me. At that time, I had a couple of guitars in a music store up in Hendersonville selling for $1,500. My profit on them wouldn't even be a profit. I would barely be breaking even. Time they took their percentage and gave me my money, I was like, it was that was stupid. But it was getting guitars out there. Okay, so we came back, took our guitars out of there because I wasn't happy. It was really uncomfortable from the start, not with that store, but with the price point. And we raised our price up to, I think, $2,500. From 1500, still not got no interest. And at that point, we're marketing through internet. Like, my wife made a website, and we're trying to market that way and getting a following and doing local things and people see it. And
how did the internet route work for you? Because it's what I'm thinking I'm going to do too.
I would have to say that the internet is the only way to sell things these days. Because we're talking global as opposed to local.
Right.
And so my guitars ended up, the price point where things started happening was about $3,500. The phone started ringing when they got to $3,500. So the demographic kind of found me. Just as an aside, I'll tell you a story. We were doing a guitar show in Memphis, and our guitars were in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. There were people that had guitars that were like $4,000 down to $1,000, and there were people that had guitars that were $10,000 up to $30,000 in the same show.
Yeah.
And it was a new show, so there was a limited amount of customers coming in, so it was easy to keep track of what was going on.
Yeah.
So customers would come in, and if they were a customer that wanted a guitar that was worth $20,000, they didn't even come to my table. And they certainly didn't go to the table where people were selling for $1,000. Mm-hmm. And the people that were looking for guitars that were $1,000 to $2,000, they didn't bother looking at my guitars or the ones that were $10,000 to $20,000. because that just wasn't, they didn't even look at them.
Yeah.
So there's just two demographics there. So it was just the people that were looking for 5,000 to 10,000 that would even bother to come look. That was a pretty big eye-opening experience that, you know, there's people that, that people are, their focus is on what they can afford or what they're willing to pay. And so you, that is going to define kind of your demographic.
Yeah. So as far as shows are concerned, do you do a lot of those, and do they really help? Did they help whenever you did them?
They help in that I get exposure to other builders and other people that are struggling with the same struggles that I have, right? And so it makes you feel like you're part of a community. I have sold things at shows, but it's a rare occurrence, and it's a lot of effort to travel to a show and sell one guitar. I mean, it takes pretty much all that profit to sell them. So. Mm-hmm. Depends on your demographic. Again, if you can have a product that sells for in $1,000 to $2,000 range, shows might be a great idea, because most of the people that come in are probably going to be, you know, that's an easier thing for them to buy than the higher price thing. We were fortunate enough that through the website that my wife built, we have a huge, I won't say following, but a huge presence. Mm-hmm. And that came because of timing and the work that she did, which was kind of out of the box. She didn't follow a traditional, you got to put billboards up and buy magazine buy magazine advertisement and advertise on the radio. We decided up front that we had a $0 budget advertisement thing. We were going to just figure it out on our own. If it didn't work, yeah, we were going to figure out something else to do. I did have the luxury of being 55 years old and having a little bit of savings to rely on. So it wasn't like, I was jumping off of a cliff. And at the time, my profession was house building, and it had dropped to zero because of the recession. And so it wasn't like I quit something on purpose to try and do this. Timing-wise, it all worked out. And her brilliancy in how she casted seeds out into the world of, she did things like, a lot of press releases just to get your name out there, get your name out in the public. Now you're with Facebook and all these other type of social media. That is the way to advertise these days. The problem is now everyone's figured that out. And so it's inundated with people showing off their stuff.
Yeah.
So you have to set yourself aside. If you think about walking into a guitar show or a store and there's hundreds of guitars there, what makes somebody walk up to your guitar if they don't, and especially if they don't know who you are, or they're not looking for that Fender or Gibson, you know, guitar.
Yeah, there's a guy that I like watching on YouTube, and his name's Ben Crowe. He's with Crimson. I don't know if you've watched any of his videos on. He does like tutorials on how to do stuff on guitars and shows off the stuff that he's built. And he's based out of the UK. But his favorite saying is, the final 10% of your build is the first thing that customers see. So that's what you gotta make sure that you get perfectly every time.
Yeah, well, you know, there's some people are in this business, they're good at one or two of the three things that you got to be really good at, and or four, say four things, and those are with as far as regard to the instrument, there's the looks part, like you're talking about, there's the playability part, and there's the sound. Those all have to be perfect in order to, you know, to rise above the rest of the crop.
Yeah.
And the fourth thing is marketing, which is probably the hardest thing for artists, because we're all so right-brained. We, you know, we don't really have, and we don't want to. I don't want to mess around with the social media and all that. Fortunately, my wife does. So.
I don't like messing around with it, but at least, you know, for me, I've had a little bit of experience to do it, but and I've got an idea, but yeah, it's definitely the least favorite part.
Yeah. So those are key elements that you have to figure, and you've got to somehow hone your craft so that you can nail those three. That's really hard. And people want perfection. The market that I'm after wants perfection. They don't want to see any blemishes, and they want it to feel perfect and sound great. And so that's how I get the money that I charge. I mean, you can't do that fast at all.
So how long did it take you to really kind of build that reputation for yourself?
It's an evolution. It's still going on. We had some key people that helped along the way, and that's another thing with regard to musical instruments. Mm-hmm. You got to get them in the hands of people that, like you mentioned before this interview started, you have to, people that have exposure. And then you have to also realize that when you get them in the hands of those people that have exposure, you can't rely on them to be wearing a sandwich board advertising your guitar. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to do it. Their focus is their playing, and that there may be the odd someone asks them a question. Sure, they'll tell them what they're playing, but they're not going to get up on stage and go, "Hey, I'm playing this Lickety guitar." That's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And there will be people that will court you as if they're wanting to marry you to get one of your instruments. And as soon as they get it, you'll never hear a thing from them again. I mean, just be prepared. That's how it goes. So as long as you're prepared for that, then you can actually utilize it. So if you have Joe Blow, who's famous, playing your instrument, then you have to get that out there. Here's pictures of Joe Blow. Joe Blow is going to be playing tonight. Here's that. He plays this brand of guitar, and just pump that out there. That's how you make that work.
I was kind of thinking about something along the lines of that, but just making a trade. Like, you play my guitar, and I'll give you the guitar. You give me a picture.
Well, that's good. The
YouTube videos, free guitar, you make a review on it.
I don't like to make people sign documents to write that you got to do this. This is a contract. Mm-hmm. I trust people's word, and I mean, that's how I like to go through life. But you can't always rely on that. Even if they sign the document, you can't. They're not going to Hey, I'm going to give you this guitar if you will advertise for me or really help me sell it. You have to go by their goodwill, because at the end of the day, they're busy and you can't monitor what they've done. And so it's definitely a challenge. And I don't blame those people for not being my spokesperson, because that's not what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not their job. So, but you do need to get them in the hands of somebody that's got exposure, like you mentioned earlier. All
right. And the other thing that I'm interested in is, so you kind of made this transition into guitar building. So what was it like just kind of jumping into it and then going in blind and building it from there? Or some of the things, I guess, maybe that you learned along the way?
Yeah, well, you have to understand that most people that get into it, once they start building, it's an addiction in a way. I mean, it's the excitement about the excitement about what I was doing was just, I couldn't stop myself. I mean, I just loved it so much, and there's so much to learn, and there's so many different ways to do something, to do the same thing. So it's a big, exciting learning thing. So at the time, my regular work had dwindled to nothing because of the recession. So I had this little window of opportunity to really jump in full force. I didn't have anything else to distract me. So that transition went pretty good. And after about a year into it, the recession still hadn't lifted, but we made the decision that even if it did, this is what I was going to do. Because we couldn't see that we were going to do well in it yet, but we could see that there was a chance of that. And I was so into what I was doing. I just had this feeling that it could be great. So we just kind of followed that feeling.
Cool. I want to check my notes real quick and make sure that I think we covered everything. It's my design.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I look forward to looking at
that. So, actually, that's how it's going to end up.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what it'll look like.
Sweet.
Let's see. I had my questions in here somewhere. Might have lost the page. Had that waiver tucked in to mark the page. let's see. If I don't find it, then...
You can pause this if you want. Maybe not.
Ha, here we go. So let's see. Okay, so the only other thing that I didn't dive in too much on, but we did talk about a little bit, do most of your sales come from online, or is it through other people saying, hey, you need to call this guy and get something from him?
Most of our sales are repeat customers, which is pretty cool. That says something.
That is cool.
But initially, it's online, and it may and there's word of mouth. We were fortunate enough to have to get it in the hands of some people that did that travel around the world, and one guy, Kimo Hussey, who's a ukulele player out of Hawaii, jumped in pretty early on in my ukulele career and bought stuff and took it around the world playing it and selling it wherever he was. Yeah. And so all of a sudden we got a name in China and Taiwan and all around the world strictly as a result of that guy, which was a blessing. So, but the internet is the thing. Once people start looking for, if you're looking for custom guitar, you typically are going to type in custom guitar on the internet, on Google. And then,
yeah.
And so you, we're on the first page on most of those word terms just because of what Corey has done. And so that's huge. And so what we realized up front, like I said earlier, that we're not going to sell in very much here locally. I have sold some stuff in North Carolina, but not a lot. Most of it's out west or internationally. And the thing also that you have to understand is people want something that's exotic in a way. So There are the people that want something that's local. I only buy local. That's a very rare occurrence. But even if they buy local, they want maybe it made out of exotic wood, something which is from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to be famous or infamous other places than where you live. I mean, people, then you're all of a sudden you got this image and I'm buying a guitar from some guy in the mountains in North Carolina and you're living in Austria. I mean, so that's a cool factor for someone in Austria. Someone in North Carolina mountains are going, well, there's 50 people I can choose from, you know. Yeah. But the people in Austria see me because I'm the one on the Google search, you know. So
yeah,
it's all about casting seeds out into the world and hoping they prosper. Yeah. And it's a small, I'll tell you, it's a small percentage of people that can make a living doing building musical instruments. I'll just say that straight up. So you got to find your niche, and you got to be really.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge. There's a lot of competition. So how do you rise above that competition? How do you get noticed?
Yeah, I think I've identified my niches. That price range of American made guitars doesn't really fall below, say, you know, if you get something extremely stripped down, maybe $1,000, mm-hmm. but you know, a standard American made electric guitar somewhere around $1,300.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, some people want American made guitars for the price of an Ibanez, which is mm-hmm. what market I'm trying to capture price wise. And then I've also noticed that, a lot of electric guitar players now are playing country music because country music's getting really big. A lot of new mm-hmm. bands are coming out there. But they primarily use a Telecaster. And, you know, if people don't like the big, long Fender scale, then they'll go play a Gibson Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing really out there that looks country Western in mm-hmm. the electric guitar market. And so that's what the next design I'm going to be working cool. on is a country yeah. music guitar with a Gibson scale. I've been trying to draw inspiration from like horse saddles and cowboy boots and cactuses.
That's a great idea. That is a great idea. Sure enough. That's something I was going to say, but it has completely escaped me. Where were we there? I know what it was. So one of the early obstacles that we had to face was if somebody was in a store and say our guitar was $1,500 and they could buy a Martin for $1,500, they would buy the Martin, even if ours looked, smelled, tasted, sounded better, because they knew there was a warrant there. Martin has a history, a great history. And so they knew that they could rely on resale. They knew that if I buy this and I need to sell it, I've got a better chance of selling some guitar that nobody's ever heard of the guy that built it. So that was an obstacle that I don't even know how you get over that. It just has to happen over time.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely offer a lifetime warranty. And some people advise that you have a buyback program. If somebody wants to trade up, then you give them, you know, a really good price back for their first guitar, and then you turn around and resell it.
Yeah, I thought about repairs already. So I think I'm only going to do bolt-on necks. That way, if something happens there, it's easy enough to just either say something happens to the body and your neck's fine, just order a new body. If something happens to the neck, just order a new neck.
Right.
So I do have that contingency in place, but I hadn't really thought so much about buyback programs or anything like that, which would be a good kind of assurance for people,
people
who don't know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you got to think outside the box for sure, and you got to, you know, when you look on Facebook now, and of course it depends on who your friends are in quotations, what you see in the news feed, right? I mean, or what gets advertised by Facebook, you know, that gets fed to you. But there's a lot of people that with some really cool looking stuff, and on mine, because I've friend everybody that within reason. I get some of these single women that friend you and they're wanting to advertise sex on your site. I don't really go for that so much, but most people that I'll friend, you know, if I look at their thing and they look okay. So I've got, you know, a couple thousand friends on Facebook. I have no idea who they are, but the reason I do that is because then when I put something on Facebook, it goes to their news feed.
Yeah.
And so that's
and
how
their
I chose.
Friends see it. And
then they share it. And so it just kind of ripples out from there. But the good side of that too is I get to good and bad is I get to see the stuff that they post on. Some of it you don't want to see, but you get pretty good at discerning what's worth your time. But what I see is more and more luthiers putting their work up. Here's such and such and what. So I do think that, and we haven't really done this yet, but we probably will. We do some videos every now and then, me playing. I try and record everything I build for the owner.
Yeah.
And Corey does some videos every now and again, but what separates the videos from somebody else's video? So what I think being more having more of a quick explanation, here's this guitar I want to show you today, and then a little bit of an explanation, and then play a little snippet of a song as opposed to just recording a song on the guitar.
Yeah.
You get more attention that way, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely better than, kind of like one of those forced... here's what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to sit down. Now I'm going to do it. And that was that.
Yeah.
You know, make it look like a music video or something like that, and people will respond to it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, 15-year-olds can do stuff with cameras and computers now that, you know, rival some of the music videos that I was watching whenever I was growing up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They can do some good stuff. If
probably
you can't, then you're
out. One of the biggest things you can do is, you know, when you shoot those videos or when you're the guitar players have a kitten on your head or a cat, you know, coming through the scene.
Or wear, at least have a t-shirt on with a
cat. Yeah, I mean, and then you're golden.
Maybe that should be the little image of the YouTube where you put your picture.
Yeah, yeah.
A cat rocking out on one of my guitars.
And then you have to have the heading, when I saw this, I couldn't believe it. You know, you got to have these headings that make you go, oh, I wonder what that was.
Best sounding guitar in the world.
Yeah.
You won't believe your ears.
Yeah, you won't believe this guy. So, but then that gets to be, people catch on to that. So you got to stay ahead of the curve all the way along.
Oh, yeah.